I think the industry was very much the way people probably perceived it. Not very, like I said, inspiring, maybe more to the contrary.
Okay.
That that was a place that people were viewed to, I'm trying to think of a very polite way of saying these things, but...
That's very kind of you.
I don't think skilled nursing facilities denoted or that there was a connotation of hope associated with them.
Welcome to another episode of Pop Health Podcast. This is Gavin Ward, co-host of Pop Health Podcast. In today's episode, I had the opportunity to sit down with Tom Olds, founder of Generations Healthcare. When Tom started Generations, he mentions that the industry was a little bit archaic and skilled nursing was stagnant. He talks about how he started with aesthetics to make folks feel like more of a hotel setting, and that created some momentum both in patients and staff. Tom also talks about how his mission statement has held Generations to be accountable to delivering excellent patient care. Tom isn't afraid to touch on the challenges as well in the skilled nursing industry, but also how he feels that it has a bright future, even with today's climate of more healthcare at home. We hope you enjoy today's episode. Feel free to find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or our website, pophealthpodcast.com. Thanks, everyone, and enjoy the show. Tom, can you tell us something about you that might surprise the audience? Maybe something outside of healthcare.
Well, that's a difficult question. First of all, you don't particularly like talking about yourself. But I've had more than one near-death experience, so maybe that's something interesting.
Are you
most of which doing things I shouldn't have been doing. But
are you able to shed any light with the audience? You don't have to go into fine detail, but...
You know, I've just been involved in things in boating where some traumatic collisions and fallen from high heights and survived and, you know, went through a major surgery and survived. I used to keep a list of these things in my head, but you don't usually keep that to yourself. You don't go around sharing people that all the times you almost killed yourself.
Wow, that's pretty neat. Well, you're definitely a survivor, which is pretty cool.
Yep.
Well, thanks for sharing a little bit about that. Now, how about just about you? Maybe about your past, where you grew up, and maybe how you eventually got into healthcare, Tom.
Yeah, that's an interesting deal when you think go back on your life and you think, well, I never really thought this is where I would be. You don't plan out, I don't think, a career. It's more so today, but back then, people were not planning a career in skilled nursing. That's certainly the case.
Yeah.
I grew up in a small town called North Las Vegas, which was obviously north of Las Vegas. And back then, Las Vegas was a very small community. Had lots of fun growing up there. It was all desert. So as a kid, spent all my time out in the desert chasing snakes and lizards and other wild animals, chasing around with my BB gun.
Nice.
My family's from southern Utah, so I spent a lot of time in southern Utah growing up. Graduated from high school in North Las Vegas, which was a tremendous amount of fun. I played sports. We had a lot of teams that were great teams. And
which sports did you play?
I played mostly baseball and basketball.
Okay.
Those are things that really have an impact on your life. And
yeah,
you learn to compete. You learn to work hard. You learn interpersonal relationships and skills. And so that was a big thing for me. My first year of college, I went to Southern Utah State, which is in Cedar City, Utah. Enjoyed that immensely. Then I served a mission for the Latter-day Saint Church when I was young. Went to Kentucky and Ohio. That was another great experience because you're just a very young person. You don't really have any experience, but you're out meeting people, talking to people, and you get involved intimately with a lot of different people with a lot of different backgrounds. And then after that, I went to Brigham Young University.
Yeah.
And got my degree at Brigham Young. And
was it, were you looking at healthcare at the time? Or
I was not. But that's where I met my wife. And initially, I worked for my father. We had a family business. But my wife's father had been in healthcare.
Okay.
And that was really the introduction, was through my wife's father.
Okay. So after college, out in Utah, did you stay in Utah or where did you transition from there?
You know, I went back to Las Vegas and actually worked with my father there for a number of years. I think I was there 6 or 7 years, something like that.
Okay.
And then I moved to Southern California, and my wife's father had started a healthcare company at that time. And so that's how I got introduced.
Okay.
My background was finance, and actually, it was a pretty fun time because that is just right when PCs came out. So young guys like you, you can't even remember a time when there weren't PCs.
Yeah.
But there were no PCs, and then they were just coming out. And so it was fun because of the amazing things you could do with spreadsheets, which were non-existent really up to that point.
Okay.
And then database programming. So I'd learned to do all of those things, which were skills that really, really were great assets in starting and running and operating a business.
Yeah, so
just getting control of data and analysis. So
were you doing finance in your first role in healthcare then? Or
Yep. So my first positions were pretty much financial analysis.
Okay. Yeah. Good. And I know today you're a CEO. So how did you go from finance, where you're maybe interacting with a screen or numbers, to being a leader where you're interacting with people? Can you walk us through briefly that journey?
You know, it's an interesting thing because ultimately numbers are just manifestations of what people are doing.
Okay.
And they can be very powerful in that way. We live now in an age where people are completely consumed with data and how that data tells a story about people, what they're doing, what they're thinking, where they're going, what they're aspiring to. It's just endless where we are. Back then, it wasn't that way at all. And so you really had a great opportunity to start down that path of just measuring. But those numbers don't mean anything if they're not connected back to people.
Right.
So you use those to interact with people, to educate people, to train people, to motivate people. And once you can show them the target, if you will, and then keep score as to whether you're hitting the target or not, we all know that that's pretty motivational to people.
Yeah,
and then you just learn, and other life experiences teach you how to interact with people. I think it was just a bridge to communication with folks. I don't know. It seemed, at least for me, it was kind of a natural bridge to both business operations, but also interacting with people.
Okay, good. And if you mind me asking, I'm just looking at your bio on the Generations Healthcare website. I know you had a leadership role at Covenant Care. Was that the organization where you first got your experience, or was that a separate organization?
No, I'd been in the business for a while prior to that.
Okay.
And so, I had been with another company prior to that. But when I was there, that was probably when I transitioned the most from just an analyst type position to a leadership type position.
Okay, good. So how did Generations Healthcare come about?
Well, like I said, I had been in the industry at that time, maybe 5 or 6 years. And the industry was in transition. When I first came into the industry, there were many, many things that were very archaic.
Okay.
And it wasn't a lot of systems. I'm thinking of a good way to describe this, but there wasn't a lot of vision. There wasn't a lot of inspiration. I think the industry was very much the way people probably perceived it. Not very, like I said, inspiring, maybe more to the contrary.
Okay.
That that was a place that people were viewed to, I'm trying to think of a very polite way of saying these things, but...
That's very kind of you.
I don't think skilled nursing facilities denoted or that there was a connotation of hope associated with them.
Yeah.
And you weren't seeing nice facilities. They were just kind of sad businesses and sad environments.
So you noticed you noticed there was opportunity for improvement.
So that's what I felt. I felt that there were big opportunities. And one of the things that we did right away was that if we could take these facilities and change, first of all, the atmosphere within the facility.
Yeah.
And that would have a big psychological effect.
Okay.
So our first ambition was to get the community to perceive us differently.
Yeah.
So we spent a lot of money on infrastructure, and we tried to make our facilities look and feel more like hotels than just residential healthcare facilities.
Okay, good. So when you started, did you create a team and then buy some buildings? Were you more of a management team that was hired by other buildings? Can you talk about that?
So we formed a team and we would buy facilities.
Okay.
And then we would remodel those facilities and we would change the perception in the market. And pretty soon, just by doing that, we would start getting really the pick of the patients. Because the patients really had the say and the choice. And if they had a choice to go between facility A and facility B, and facility B was much nicer, then they were going to go to facility B.
Great. So when did this all get started? What year?
So that was 1998.
Okay. And your first building or?
Yeah. So our first building was a facility out in Lakeview Terrace.
Okay.
Which no longer exists, actually. And it was a completely different model than where we ended up. It was a facility designated to basically care for elderly people with psychiatric conditions.
Okay. Gotcha. So that makes sense. So as you went around and changed, in a sense, the aesthetics of the building, it gave a greater sense of, energy, life, joy. What would you say that the newer aesthetics of the building, what did that create within the patients and staff?
Well, and that's a good point because it affects both. It affects the patient psychology quite a bit.
Yeah.
But probably just as importantly, maybe even it could be even more importantly, it affects the employee psychology.
Yeah.
So at that point, they perceive, well, we're really about something. We're actually, you know, it creates momentum, it creates motion, it creates a psychology that we're going somewhere, we're doing something important.
Okay.
And we're a part of something important. And so they begin to treat each other differently. They begin to treat their patients differently. And now they're a part of a team that has a mission. And that spills over into the community as well. Once you've made that transition, we still do that to this day.
Yeah.
You know, in the last year, we just acquired 6 more facilities. And every one of them was in a very desperate situation. Every one of them was. And it's an interesting thing. All of that generally has to do with lack of vision and lack of leadership.
Yeah.
And the teams within these buildings, you know that that's all they're looking for. They're looking for vision. They're looking for leadership. They're looking for a cause.
Yeah.
And when all you have to do is give that to them. And it's quite interesting how quickly and dramatically the transformation can take inside of one of these facilities.
Great.
And the great thing about it is that the residents and the patients respond to it as well very quickly.
Yeah,
and they're very, very appreciative of it.
So you talked about vision and mission a few moments ago. And initially, I talked about aesthetics. We know there's a lot more to it than just the way a building looks. So what is, or how does your mission statement guide your approach to patient care? And can you share what your mission statement is?
Yes, I can, hopefully.
He knows
it well. Let's see how well I do. Generations Healthcare was founded upon the belief that caring for the sick, the elderly, and the infirm is a special and sacred stewardship. It is our mission to have this belief reflected in everything we do, in the presentation of our homes, in the professionalism of our staff, and in the daily delivery of care to our residents and their families. It is our purpose that whoever enters a Generations home will be met with kindness, competence, and compassion. We are caring for a lifetime of memories, a lifetime of care, a lifetime of love. One of the fun things that we did and continue to do, but we did it in a very aggressive way in the early days of the company, was to get folks to memorize our mission statement.
Yeah.
Those were very fun times. I would go around from facility to facility, and if people would had it memorized, and a lot of them were too embarrassed to volunteer, but if somebody would, they would get $20.
Oh, nice.
So that was a big deal. Then our residents started memorizing our mission statement.
Wow.
So that really held us accountable.
I bet.
And then we had vendors who had memorized our mission statement.
Ooh, smart.
So, yeah, isn't that fun?
Yeah. Wow, that's a lot. That's a lot to do. A lot of responsibility.
Yes.
You guys are accountable to a lot. That's a lot.
Well, the thing that is so important about it is a lot of folks have mission statements.
Yep.
I don't know. It's hard to opine on how effective they are. Sometimes they're good idea statements. But for us, I think it's very definitive of what we believe and how we believe, what our goals are, or what our vision is.
Yeah.
I think our mission statement communicates a certain amount of momentum and a certain amount of responsibility and a certain amount of accountability. So I think where we have been very effective is painting a picture of what we want to hold ourselves accountable to and how we're going to interact with one another. One of the biggest challenges that you have as a company and as a manager, or as a leader, or is having some document or having some source or some vision or some thing that everybody can kind of tie themselves to.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you think about sailors, the sailors always could tie themselves to the North Star. So that's how they knew their position.
Yep.
And with our mission statement, that's our North Star. That's what we hold ourselves to. And we can find out if we're in balance or out of balance at any time with regard to that. When we sit down and have to counsel with an employee, it's very easy to talk in terms of your actions in line with this mission statement.
Absolutely.
And so that has been very powerful to us. It's also very powerful in that our patients and their families also know what to hold us accountable to.
Absolutely.
And, you know, there it's not specific in terms of, did you deliver this medication to me at this time in accordance with these regulations? But it's above that. It's everybody knows that if you're living according to this statement, then you are doing those specific kind of things.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, Tom, appreciate you sharing some background on Generations, how it got started, the mission. We're going to take a quick break. And when we get back, we're going to jump into how skilled nursing is doing today and what the future of skilled nursing will be.
Okay.
Thanks, folks. We'll take a quick break. Pop Health Podcast is a public service of 24-hour home care. Skilled nursing has been in the news in the healthcare world for a few years now, more so than usual, as there's a big push, the public perception of having more care in the home. So I was curious from your perspective, Tom, about the existing state of the industry or Generations Healthcare and what you think the future state is with that push.
Yeah, it's been a very trying time, I would say, and things have changed dramatically. I don't think that necessarily that it's all been a change for the good. I think it's very difficult to communicate to folks really the amazingly good things that happen inside of these facilities. I think there's years and years of stories that are antithetical to that, and they don't really project what are really amazing stories. There's a number of things that have happened in recent years, as you said, a push for people to go home and receive more home care, and fewer readmissions to the hospital. I think those are good goals, but within the right framework and the right context. Let me first say that, you know, our business is very much driven by government regulation.
Okay.
And all of our reimbursement is essentially driven by government regulation. So there isn't anything we do that isn't regulated. And the government uses those regulations to drive our industry and our business in different directions. I think everybody's acutely aware that there's a big concern about all the money that's being spent on Medicare. There's a big concern about money that's being spent on end of life care. And there's a big concern about the government deficit and the government debt, which is building up. And a lot of that has to do with, you know, Medicare expenditures, but it also has to do with Medicaid expenditures. The government, particularly under Obamacare, went down this path and, you know, was very assertive with trying to create a model that they thought would reduce the cost of healthcare by getting people out of facilities quicker and home quicker. So those facilities include hospitals. Can we get people out of hospitals quicker, or can we get them not to go into hospitals? If they come out of the hospital, then where do they go? And why do they go there? The typical problem that is created by that is that these are policies and regulations that are designed by bureaucrats somewhere in an office in Washington that don't necessarily connect with real world experience. So for us, a number of things have been the consequence of that, where the big difference has been is that things are very much more compressed in terms of rates, what the government wants to pay for these services. But that is in juxtaposition where we see patients that have greater needs. So you can imagine that these are very difficult opposing forces.
Right.
So we're seeing patients that are sicker than we've ever seen. We've actually become small hospitals. And our outcomes are quite extraordinary, actually. But my feeling is I'm very worried that we're getting to a breaking point. And that is that we're putting a lot of stress on the system in terms of asking for certain outcomes without providing the resources or the capital to get those outcomes. That's very stressful on our industry right now.
So just to confirm, you mentioned your higher acuity expected to do more. I don't know if you said those exact words, so forgive me if I'm speaking on your behalf, but expected to do more. But not necessarily receiving the reimbursement that you would need to do more? Am I getting that right?
That's exactly right. One of the biggest things that has happened, and it's a difficult thing because it really is the antithesis of the marketing ideals of Obamacare. But the reality is, particularly in our space, much of the industry has now been turned over to managed care companies. And so the managed care companies are driven and incentivized and also penalized if they don't get these practices enforced.
Okay.
So it used to be that the government really handled the Medicare program.
Right.
Now they've handed very much of that over to managed care companies.
Got it. So I know that now is a challenging time.
Yep.
But I believe, and I'm sure everyone in the room that's here for the recording believes, that while skilled nursing has challenging times, there likely always be a place for skilled nursing. And I wanted to ask you, what's an example of a scenario, even though there's all these forces trying to push patients to the home, where does generations in skilled nursing fit today? And what is the right, where do people need to come to generations first? Can you give us an example for skilled nursing first?
I think that's a very good question. And I actually think that a good way to look at it is that the difference between our setting and home health, for example, is a patient that would come to us is going to get maybe 2 hours a day of direct therapy. So they're going to have therapists there, PT, OT, speech. They're going to get 4 hours a day of direct nursing care. And so they have a very focused, intense regimen for a couple of weeks to get them strong and get them healthy before they return home. So I think folks would probably be pretty surprised to understand that I would say 90% of the patients that are admitted to us go home within 30 days.
Okay.
So I think people have a tendency to think of skilled nursing as maybe as long-term care or that you're going to be there for a long time, but that's really not the case. And so there's a big push to get, as you mentioned, to get people to go home quicker. We think we're the best prepared to get them home and stay home. When they go to home health, for example, they're probably only getting therapy a couple of times a week as opposed to concentrated therapy every day for a couple of hours for a couple of weeks. So, and then when you go home, most of us are not that ambitious about taking care of ourselves and following our treatment programs. Most of us are not driven and motivated to do our rehab by ourselves.
Right.
So the process of recovery can actually, I think, take a lot longer with folks go directly home as opposed to a short-term stay with us. And we see the outcomes that people's strength and mobility increase dramatically just in a short period of time if they stay with us.
Great. And just to clarify, I think most folks listening understand PTOT. For those of you that maybe, for example, seniors or part of the general public, PT is physical therapy, OT is occupational therapy, and then speech therapy as well. Those are all services that you can receive at a generations building. And as Tom mentioned, 2 hours, which is different than home health, which home health is also a good service for the right type of patient, but you're not going to get as much therapy.
That's right.
In the home, and maybe not move the needle as quickly, I believe, is what kind of you're alluding to there at a generations or skilled nursing building. Let's jump quickly into technology as we just have a few minutes left here in the show. Can you talk briefly about how technology is being used today and maybe some of the challenges that come with whether the staff utilizing the technology or getting patients to engage with technology?
Yeah, I think that there's been a lot of high hopes for technology in our space, and that takes a lot of different forms. So we certainly have better tools to work with in the therapy side of things. We have better assessment tools. But even in healthcare in general, the technological advances are just extraordinary. So it will be interesting to see. And, you know, we could see certain transitions happening quite a few years ago. Probably 5 years ago, we got a tremendous amount of patients that had just had a hip replacement or a knee replacement or some kind of joint treatment. We see fewer and fewer of those now because the surgeons have become so good. Now we treat different types of patients that may have had a stroke or some other type of acute episode, which is just substantially different than somebody that is ostensibly healthy, except for they've had a surgery. In that case, they probably don't have any other health issues other than they needed a new hip or they needed a new knee. So they're otherwise healthy.
Yeah.
Treating a patient like that is substantially different than treating a patient with multiple comorbidities. And that's where we are now, okay, is dealing with patients that are not just having one episode, but have an episode that's compounded by other comorbidities. So a lot of that now requires us to use different tools and different technology, training, education. And at the end of the day, it's still direct one-on-one patient care.
Yeah.
Where our hope is that that technology will become more effective for us is the labor associated with just the paperwork and the rigid guidelines of documenting all of the care.
Absolutely.
So to the extent that we can reduce that, we're going to get better direct care.
I know you got, like you mentioned, you guys are heavily regulated under a lot of compliance rules. And the audience can actually find ratings for all skilled nursing.
Right.
Facilities. Forgive me, the website is not in my head. Do you remember where folks can find that? Healthcare.gov might be it. But yeah, so if people want to learn more about all the compliance,
yes,
that you guys have to go, yes, through and see the actual quality of a Generations building or other skilled nursings, they can look online under a CMS star rating system. Speaking of technology, Tom, you know, podcast is actually somewhat of a newer thing due to technology. I was curious from your perspective on a personal note, one, if you have a smartphone, and if you do, which app would make the most impact if it was removed from your phone, not including email or GPS?
Well, the one that if my email was taken away from me or my texting was taken away from me, those would be the most impactful.
Yeah, I bet. Anyone's on a personal side? Like, I don't know.
Chess? Social chess?
Oh, there we go. Is that what you play?
Yes.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Are you a pretty good chess player?
Not according to my ranking.
So are you playing actual, like, friends, colleagues, strangers? How does that work?
Yeah, there's thousands of people out there, as you well know, millions.
Yes.
That like to do these things. And you can just say, I'm up for a game, and they'll find a match for you, and you just go and play.
Nice. Well, from what you shared in the show so far, navigating the leadership of Generations Healthcare and all the changes could be need a lot of strategy, just like in chess.
So true.
Yeah. I actually am at least was a big chess player. I won a chocolate chess set in Glendora, California.
There you go.
I won the fourth and fifth grade chess championship for the city. So maybe on all your free time as a leader, we can sneak in a game. I might have to get your handle on social chess and get
there
a game going.
There you go.
Well, we've talked about a lot today, Tom. The time is coming to a close. Is there anything else you want to leave the audience with about skilled nursing and Generations Healthcare?
Well, Generations Healthcare in specific, I'm just very pleased with our organization. And I think we've been recognized as maybe the very top skilled nursing company in California for a while. I'm very pleased with our teams. I'm very pleased with the outcomes that we get. We are very committed and follow through in every way to try to make our mission statement realized and recognized every day. And I know that the patients that come to our facilities get extraordinary results. It's so interesting. I don't know how we overcome this image, but every day when I go and visit our facilities are filled with smiles. And our employees are smiling, but more importantly, our residents are smiling. And there isn't a time that I go to one of our facilities where a family member or a resident doesn't want to make sure they tell me how great of an experience they're having. And there are certain things in life that we just can't do on our own. And sometimes, you know, you just need a place where you need some help and you need somebody you trust and somebody that's going to help you down the path a little further before you can, so you can do it again on your own. That is very, very satisfying and rewarding to me. I have in mind so many stories, but and so many experiences. I was up in the Bay Area not too long ago and visiting one of our facilities. And this, we had a big luncheon celebration for the staff there. I think they had won a big award, company award or something. And so a lot of their residents came to celebrate with them, which is an interesting thing when you think about it. So yeah. People that had gone home for a while wanted, still had that connection and made great friendships and great associations that they still come back to the facility and help. One of these was a man who had fallen off the roof of his home, which, of course, you go, oh, what's an elderly man doing on his roof in the first place? But he's probably that different than me, you know?
He's a survivor as well.
Yeah. And he had fallen off his roof, landed on his head, and broke his neck. And then he's had spent quite a bit of time with us, had completely rehabbed from that.
Awesome.
He was so thrilled and so happy about the care and the people that he interacted with. We have a facility down here in Newport Beach where they have these reunions and hundreds of people come back because they've made such close friendships out of rehabbing with other residents and other families in that facility just for a short period of time. So I think the idea of smiles and people thrilled with overcoming a traumatic experience in their life and surviving and knowing that they've made new friends is the image that I like to leave with folks about skilled nursing and about Generations Healthcare.
Very good, Tom. Well, Tom Olds, you've been a great guest. Appreciate you having us here and the learning from you. If folks would like to learn more about Generations Healthcare and if there might be a location in their community, hopefully you won't skilled nursing, but if you do, how can people learn more about Generations Healthcare? How can they find Generations Healthcare online?
So you can go to lifegen.net. That's our website. And there are a lot of fun facts and interesting stories on our website, as well as our locations. Oh, yes. And we have tours. I'm thinking visual tour, but I'm thinking virtual tour. Is that it? On every one of our facilities on our website. So
great. Well, feel free to take a look, folks. Again, that was
lifegen.net.
.net.
Yeah.
Not .com. Lifegen.net. Again, Tom Olds has been our guest. We're recording today from Generations Healthcare's main office here in Santa Ana, California. But they do have locations, as you can see on their website, throughout the state of California, as well as Nevada, and that's in Henderson. Thanks, everyone. If you like today's show, feel free to check out more episodes on pophealthpodcast.com or searching Pop Health Podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or Spotify. And feel free to reach out to us by emailing us info@pophealthpodcast.com. We also love your reviews. Feel free to leave any feedback on any of those sites. Again, that's on iTunes or Stitcher primarily for the reviews. Thanks, everyone. Take care.